This is Kurt Anderson, and you're not listening to Studio 360 for hard news, for stories about war and crime and politics. You're listening for what we usually talk about here, the music and art and ideas and whole cities that talented people create and the rest of us adore. Works of art that allow us to experience the world more deeply or differently, that give us glimpses into other minds and lives and imaginary realms and connect us to other people. In other words, you're here for stories about our culture. But last week, it was our culture that was the target of war and crime and politics. I came to LA to make rock and roll. Along the way, I had to sell my soul. I made some good friends that make me say, I really want to be in LA. This song is not what anybody would call provocative, just a bit of good, harmless pop from a Southern California band called Eagles of Death Metal. They were on stage at the Bataclan Theater in Paris. The band escaped, but 89 of their fans were murdered, as were dozens of other Parisians targeted as they enjoyed a night out at cafes and a soccer match. Shortly after the massacres, France's National Assembly met. They had a moment of silence, and then they all started singing. And in the days following, people all over the world started singing that song too, at theaters, in public squares. This was their response to the murderous true believers who just attacked Beirut and a university in Kenya as well. Jihadists who declared war on culture.
It is a culture generally that prides itself on its openness and also in a public sphere that is very visible.
Rafia Zakaria is a Pakistani-American columnist for Al Jazeera America. I reached her in Oslo.
The cafe culture, and enjoying the company of friends and loved ones in these public spaces is very integral to European society. And so to strike at the heart of it is very clever. I mean, you can feel a very palpable sense of suspicion and paranoia here.
Zakaria says that in Paris last week, instead of going after major landmarks, the terrorists decided to target fun. Which may at first sound like a trivial notion, but as she says, fun is essential to life. Culture, among other things, is about having fun.
And when you eviscerate fun, and when you do it in a way that is so visible and hence traumatizes not simply the people who are there, but all the rest of us who are watching this, you say that that part of human existence does not have the justification to exist. Fun is a delicate thing, and you can create secure environments, but they are likely no longer spontaneous or fun, because once fun is tainted by paranoia, it's no longer the same thing.
We are a little afraid, but I think we must continue to see all this cultural life in Paris.
Last weekend in Paris, almost all of the scheduled concerts were canceled, the museums closed. But as soon as they reopened, Parisians were there. One of the first bands to retake the stage was the English pop group Simply Red. Remember them from the 80s? And people were lined up down the street.
You don't stop doing the things you love. You don't stop going to see the groups you love.
It's so important. There is a real Paris spirit, and especially regarding this kind of problem. And so sad for everybody. So we have to be strong, and we will be.
After the 9/11 attacks in New York, did the New Yorkers stop going to the Metropolitan Museum?
No.
So it's the same thing. 10 years ago, we had an attack in London at the tube station. Londoners continued their lives. Sadly, we've all been through it. They had it in Spain. Life goes on.
I want to read you something. We are a profoundly secular city, people free to worship their own gods or to be godless. Blasphemy is common. Irreverence is obligatory. Art is at least as important as religion. Eccentric ideas and profane entertainment flourish. That's something I wrote 14 years ago for Time magazine in the days just after 9/11 about New York City. But rereading it for the first time since then, it feels like I could have written it last week about Paris. There are some apt phrases in French for what that made me feel. I'm thinking of déjà vu and plus ça change. Like France now, in the days following the 2001 attacks, the United States retaliated by bombing the terrorists in the Middle East. And then, feverishly, inevitably, we went to war. In 2003, just as we were about to invade Iraq, one of my intellectual heroes came into the studio, the late Susan Sontag. We talked about Homer's depiction of one of the first long, terrible, organized killing sprees in the Mediterranean, the Trojan War.
Homer treats war as something that's just part of human activity. It's something awful, but it exists. It's something people do. It's something people want to do, as painful and awful as it is.
I asked her about when and why civilized people finally moved beyond that fatalistic sense of inevitability about righteous mass killing into deep outrage, even when we weren't the victims. And she said it was a painter who helped us see and think about war differently a couple hundred years ago.
Goya is a kind of turning point. I think what's interesting about Goya, what's magnificent and admirable about Goya, is that these are images of protest. They're not just showing us what is horrible. They are saying, this shouldn't happen. I don't think Homer is saying this shouldn't happen. I don't think Shakespeare is saying this shouldn't happen in Henry V, for instance, which is
quite the opposite almost.
Right, quite the opposite. I don't think there's any protest really to speak of in the representation of these conflicts until the beginning of the 19th century and until Goya. I think Goya is a kind of turning point. Goya is actually saying we should be horrified. We should not just find this horrible. We should be horrified. We should protest. We should deplore. We should take a moral position.
And which of his paintings do you find the most moving in its or
well,
full of impact?
What he shows in this series of images is tremendous sadistic cruelties of soldiers against civilians. And Goya is reacting to a new kind of war, a new kind of war on European soil at any rate. And what he shows are the most awful things. I mean, people being dismembered, hanging, people who are hanged who have had their limbs amputated. What's so striking in these Goya images are the captions, which apparently are by Goya himself, where he says things like, "Can you believe it? Can you look at this? This is impossible to look at."
But of course, art can also be deployed to glorify and encourage war. And these terrorists today are doing exactly that.
I'm Bernard Haeckel, professor of Near Eastern Studies at Princeton University.
Haeckel co-wrote an article in The New Yorker about jihadi poets, writers who are well known among members of Al-Qaeda and ISIS, who eulogize the dead and radicalize the willing.
You know, this is a movement that is sustained by a narrative. A narrative of victimization, of humiliation of Muslims, of the ability of this movement to bring glory and power back to Muslims, and also a memorialization of the great deeds of the movement's heroes and dead martyrs, quote unquote. So, you know, all of that has to be put in some cultural form in order to transmit this knowledge, this memory, and this history of the movement from, you know, one generation to the next, from the older fighters to the younger fighters, and they're prolific in doing this.
And from your descriptions of their poetry, for all of their postmodern use of the internet and videos and everything, the poetry is in this is kind of
archaic.
Archaic, right?
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it is a production of a form of archaic culture. Because you see, they are trying to say that we are like the original the first generations of Muslims who lived in the 7th and 8th century of the Common Era. And those Muslims, we know from the historical record, engaged in poetry and had a culture. And so the ISIS people are trying to reproduce that culture in some claim for authenticity, that
right.
we are the real thing.
Right.
You know? And unlike these other corrupted Muslims who have taken on Western culture or who have forgotten who Muslims really are and ought to be.
Yeah. And they share this poetry, for instance, like they do their videos online?
Yeah, on social media, yeah, basically.
Yeah.
And these poems are memorized, and then they're often recited by fighters when they're sitting around and between battles.
Really?
Hanging out. Yeah, absolutely.
In other words, ISIS knows full well the power of culture to shape minds.
In fact, their loss of territory and their loss of battles, in particular against the Kurds, but also the Iraqi government forces, has meant that they're looking increasingly like losers.
Right.
So they need to have, quote-unquote, successful attacks. They need
right.
to bring themselves back into the limelight as the great warriors of Islam, defenders of the religion. So the Paris attack has done this. And you can see this immediately when the attack was happening. I mean, there were thousands of tweets by supporters and people celebrating
right.
While the attacks were happening. So, you know, you cannot capitulate to them.
Right.
But you have to be able to alter their narrative and make it ring hollow with their followers.
You know who else has followers?
Nothing about what these assholes are trying to do is going to work.
John Oliver. On his TV show the other night, he explained why France will endure.
If you're in a war of culture and lifestyle with France, good luck. Because go ahead, bring your bankrupt ideology. They'll bring Jean-Paul Sartre, Edith Piaf, fine wine, Gaulois cigarettes, Camus, Camembert, Madeleines, macarons, Marcel Proust, and the croquembouche. The croquembouche. You just brought a philosophy of rigorous self-abnegation to a pastry fight, my friend.
And out of France, a cartoon has been making the rounds online this week. It's by one of the surviving Charlie Hebdo cartoonists, Joanne Zvar. His cartoon says, "Friends from the whole world, thank you for hashtag pray for Paris. But we don't need more religion. Our faith goes to music, kisses, life, champagne and joy." Exactly. Culture and art and entertainment and reason and delight in the beautiful, motley, hurly-burly of cosmopolitan cities. In those things, I am a true believer.
It's the life of Paris. Paris without culture is nothing.
They can't stop us. They can't. We'll still be there. It's impossible for us to stop because this is also what we love. And they can't stop us from loving each other, from loving what we love.
Thanks to Colette Davidson for bringing us those voices from Paris.